This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Leach Whelan. Tonight, some pushback against the tobacco generational endgame.
So first, we look at the proposed bill, what it covers, what it aims to achieve, and then some of the criticisms have been focused on the harshness of the punishments within it, so we're going to unpack that.
Tell us, are you in support of the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill? Call us, 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and yesterday the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill, also known as the Control of Tobacco Product and Smoking Bill of 2022, was tabled in Parliament, and Health Minister Kairi Jamaluddin said the bill is expected to be debated and passed during the current Day One Rakyat sitting. So a number of things, but the main thrust of it is that it will ban the sale of cigarettes and tobacco products to those born in 2007 and after. This includes electronic cigarettes and vape products. And of course, the intention of this is to create a whole generation of people who will not have access to purchase cigarettes and other tobacco products.
There have been some changes already. There may yet be more because, like we said, there has been pushback. But, for example, you mentioned 2007, but initially the bill was going to cover those born in 2005 and after. The minister said that this change was made after careful consideration of the arguments presented during stakeholder engagement sessions earlier this year. And this larger aim of protecting the younger generation from getting into the practice of smoking is in line with the target of reducing the prevalence of smoking to below 5%. By 2040. And I mean, if we're talking about the prevalence of it right now, the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2019 estimated that 4.8 million Malaysians aged 15 years and above smoked, and that's equivalent to a prevalence of about 21.3%.
So if we look at the details of the bill itself, is where I think some of the points of contention now are emerging. So the punishment for the sale of tobacco products or services for smoking to those born in 2007 and beyond, first offence, a maximum fine of 20K, 1 year imprisonment for individuals, a maximum fine of 100,000 ringgit and 2 years imprisonment for a corporate body. For a second or subsequent offence, a maximum fine of 30,000 ringgit and 2 year imprisonment for individuals, maximum fine of 300,000 and a 3 year imprisonment for a corporate body. Now, for the purchase or the use of tobacco products, smoking substances, substitute tobacco products or smoking device, a maximum fine of 5,000 ringgit. So to be clear, that's for users. You will be fined 5,000 ringgit if you were born 2007 and beyond. For smoking in non-smoking areas or places, 5,000 ringgit, as well as building owners and occupiers also having a duty to display a no-smoking sign.
So the distinction to be made there, of course, is between, like you said, users, people who are actually using the products, smoking, purchasing the products, and the people who are providing that service. In other words, companies, purveyors of products, just your general merchants and sellers. And that's the distinction between the cost of the fine as well as the heaviness of the offence. But that 5,000 ringgit in particular, right, for personal use or for as a personal user, that's really where a lot of the focus has been, as well as potentially on the heaviness of the imprisonment for juvenile offenders, things like that. All of which to say, that is where the conversation is sitting. So specifically, in a statement today, the bipartisan Dewan Rakyat Special Select Committee on Health, Science and Innovation did ask for a mandatory evaluation of the bill. Its chairman, Dr. Kelvin Yee, who's going to be our guest later, actually raised concerns about the enforcement powers granted, saying that the power to inspect, possibly body check and punish a child for possession must be heavily controlled to prevent abuse. There's also a conversation about the penalties on juvenile offenders, which we are going to talk about. So that's where it is in Parliament. I'm curious to see how it's received now in the public, because broadly, I don't think there's been anybody who isn't aligned with a tobacco company, who disagrees with the larger aim and purpose of the bill. It's always going to be, I think, in the finer details that the disagreements emerge.
Yes, and so that's where we're going to try and unpack. First, we're going to look at what the bill itself proposes to do now that it's been tabled. And later, we're going to address some of the concerns around the implementation of it. Let us know, are you in support of the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill? You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 0187898899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Dr. Muralidharan Munasamy, Managing Director of the National Cancer Society of Malaysia. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, it's 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're talking about the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill, which was tabled yesterday in Parliament, and we're trying to understand what it covers. Do send your thoughts through. Are you in support of it? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. Joining us now, Dr. Muralidharan Munasamy, Managing Director of the National Cancer Society of Malaysia. Dr. Murali, good to have you with us.
Good evening. Always a pleasure, and thanks for having me on.
So this Tobacco Generational Endgame has been in discussion for quite a few months. How does it feel now that it's been tabled?
Of course, it's a bit of relief that we finally got it off the kind of starting block. But I think still a long way to go till it gets to the end. So it's still quite a bit of running to do to finish the race.
So the plans were only announced early this year. Were you surprised by the speed at which the bill has progressed?
Yes and no. What do I mean by that? We've actually been working on a tobacco control bill for at least now for about 15 years. We've gone through almost about four ministers of health, successive governments. And finally, I mean, we're really happy that YBKJ actually took up the kind of mantle to champion this bill and get it onto the parliament floor.
You did consult with the ministry on this. So talk to us about the role you played and what the key considerations were.
Okay. So for a lot of us in civil society, it's been a hard no in terms of the vaping, kind of regulating vape as an industry for a long while. And for a lot of us, we still continue to have strong opinions that vape will lead to a lot of health harms in the future and is irrespective of age. But seeing equally the point of livelihoods of Malaysians, you know, that's a small, medium industry, even large industry that seems to have kind of sprouted out overnight. It's going to be kind of also unfair, but also rather an abrupt thing to kind of shut everyone down. So in view of kind of the larger considerations and kind of within our current economic, social climate, we have kind of come to a compromise, take as much as we can in terms of winning from the bill, but also to kind of put in our kind of considerations to make sure overall there's still a net benefit to the health of all Malaysians. And that's really been kind of the scope that we've taken or the angle that we've taken in terms of working together on this bill.
So the target is to reduce the prevalence of smoking to below 5% by 2040, which isn't actually that long away. What do you think about the feasibility of this aim?
Okay, so for one, a lot of people think that this is a new target, but it's actually been in place for a long time. So what has changed is how we're going to get to that target. Previously, we were talking about better education, better awareness, kind of reduction overall in the adult population who smokes. But right now, we're taking a very bold step, brave, and I think courageous on, if I could speak, like to the Ministry of Health, to actually take this move to have a very structured, systematic plan to de-escalate the number of Malaysians who will actually smoke through this regulation. So we're looking at over, say, within about 10 years or so, significantly reducing the number of ever smokers, meaning people who are ever going to get into the habit of using at all. So this is kind of where we're angling to tackle the problem.
You touched on this briefly just now. So the ban does include vaping and nicotine products. Why is this important?
Oh, it is very important because contrary to what a lot of miscommunication, misinformation is out there, a lot of people feel that, look, you need to have access to vape as a form of harm reduction. Well, speaking from a very purely scientific perspective, the science is very clear. Now, harm reduction by itself is science that there's a lot of evidence point against the effectiveness of harm reduction, but I'll not go down that road at this point in time. I won't speak to it. But the point to make is vape as a harm reduction tool, if it were to be used as a harm reduction tool, then it needs to be available to people who are already smoking. And that's an important point, and this bill kind of covers that. So everyone who's above 18, who's already a smoker, and in fact, I think you saw today, the minister announced that we would kind of widen the kind of start point to begin from 2007. So from people who are older than 18, from the time that they turn 18, from 2007 onwards, they will not have access to either smoking nor vape. And the reason why they shouldn't also have access to vape is they're not smokers. They would have been, because current existing law in Malaysia already disallows you to smoke until you turn 18. So for this generation, they will entirely be smoke-free because they won't have access to vape as a tool of initiation. And this is the problem, because evidence in many countries, including the UK and everywhere else, is showing us that a lot of people who never started smoking have now started vaping as a form of nicotine use. Subsequently, evidence also shows us they go on to become dual users. So rather than becoming a cessation tool, vaping is actually becoming a gateway for them to actually go on to become smokers. So this is what we are trying to, and hopefully we achieve that, is go for this stop on initiation. So we will still continue kind of allowing people who are already smoking, who are adults, to then purportedly use vape as a form of harm reduction. But for those who haven't started using anything, the idea is to never make them start anything.
So what long-term benefits do you see the bill having on the healthcare system?
Immediately, I think within the first 5 years, you'll start seeing a huge decrease in terms of costs. Definitely direct costs, simply because as vaping becomes more and more prevalent in other countries with similar economies such as ours, we're beginning to see a lot of health effects from those who vape, leave alone those who smoke, yeah? Because, you know, you're going to need quite a bit of time to find a financial impact on the reduction of chronic diseases caused by smoking. But vaping itself is going to give you a quick win when you bring down the number of, like, new people who start to vape. So over the long term, the mid to long term, you'll also start to see this huge kind of health reduction, health cost reductions in terms of people who don't pick up a lot of other chronic diseases which are associated with smoking, vaping, and of course, within about 10 years, you'll start to see that dip in cancers as well.
So some pushback, you know, some policymakers are saying that the measures are too punitive, the ones that have been built into the bill, especially when it comes to punishing teenagers. What are your thoughts on this?
Right. And this is something that we've been very careful in our consultations to ministry as well. And I'm very pleased to say that I think today in discussions, the minister did confirm, clarify, perhaps even assure lawmakers that there will be no criminalization of young people. And the fines will remain even lower than what it is currently for your kind of violation of smoking in public places such as restaurants, which is really at about 30 ringgit, 50 ringgit. And these are the same kind of fines that the ministry will continue to kind of put out for the longest time until, what is this, it's quite clear that we're trying to kind of achieve a social norm. Because don't get me wrong, and I think the minister also, I think there's some legal kind of issues around the idea of immediately incorporating community service as part of the punishment. But the ministry has told stakeholders that, look, we're looking at community service being constituting a large part of the kind of punishments that will be put into place when that does happen. What's also important is there's this two-year kind of educational enforcement, if you will, kind of period where people are slowly going to be educated about the law and how it comes into effect. And the idea, I think, is to go for a soft landing, ease people into the idea that, you know, it's not maybe it's not easy, or it's not proper for you to be kind of using smoke or vape, any kind of tobacco product, if you're within that age limit. And also kind of important also to mention that I think the spirit of the entire act is not about using maybe all these fines to kind of generate revenue for the government or to kind of increase the national economy. Rather, all these are to serve as a kind of social deterrent and over time bring about this kind of social norm which will allow us to not have younger people using cigarette or vaping products.
We have this question on WhatsApp from Sayu, who has actually two questions. Firstly, will this bill include non-Malaysians, tourists, foreigners with working permits, etc.? If they are included, how will it be enforced? Secondly, what will happen to those who provide tobacco products to those born after the said year? And, you know, Sayu clarifies, for example, elders, friends and so on. So not sell, just provide.
Okay, so I think for the non-Malaysian issue, I think this shouldn't be an issue in the sense that we have, for example, a law in place that even currently prohibits those under 18 from utilizing tobacco products. So this is a law which is in effect for anybody who is in Malaysia, irrespective of whether you're a citizen or not. So I don't think there'll be any kind of discriminatory kind of differences between residents, citizens, non-residents. So I think then it's a matter of, and I think one of the good things is that we've seen technology come a really long way. It's as simple as now how we can look at a MySejahtera to determine your age. It could be, and again, I'm just speaking about some solutions that the ministry is contemplating and has shared with us. It may be even a specific app that you may download to like verify your age, and that'll enable you to buy or not buy tobacco products. So it's not too complicated in the age of tech now. So, but I'm sure that'll be something that we'll look at. But definitely, as a Malaysian, I would expect us to have absolutely no kind of discriminatory practices onto those living in the same country, irrespective of whether they're citizens or not. And second, on the question of whether other people who are providing, I think within the bill, which you can actually see that there is provision there to punish those who are, you know, aiding or abetting in provision of tobacco products to someone who's not of the proper age to consume said products. Admittedly, again, a lot of people are going into little nitty-gritty details. Like, for example, there's a question on, there's a father sitting at a table and a grandfather sitting at a table. Will you only penalize the son who's 15 for smoking, but not the father who's giving them a cigarette? Now, again, and I'm sure, like the principle is of deterrence, and with a few fines, and as people get more and more aware that this is something that just should not be done or condoned, this is something that will spread within the social fabric enough for people to not do it. It's similar, again, it's very similar to other kind of regulations, laws we have in place, as the distribution of pornography or similar illicit substances like heroin or others. So these are not really terribly new kind of laws that we're putting out. It's just about widening this age gap.
Dr. Murli, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Muralidharan Munisamy, Managing Director of the National Cancer Society of Malaysia. Do keep your thoughts coming. Are you in support of the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us, and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're talking about the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill, which was tabled yesterday for the first time in Parliament. Earlier, we looked at the lay of the land, what the bill aims to do. Now we're going to hone in on some of the concerns or pushback that has emerged once the details of the bill has become public. So we'd like to hear from you. Are you in support of the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Dr. Kelvin Yee, Committee Chairman of the Parliamentary Special Select Committee on Health, Science and Innovation. Dr. Kelvin, good to have you with us as always.
Thank you.
So the generational endgame bill has been welcomed by many, but it's not been without criticism. And you've expressed some concerns as well. Could you tell us about them?
So basically, the Parliamentary Select Committee has had proceedings to meet all different stakeholders on this bill, so also to listen for their inputs and also to hear their concerns. So, of course, the main concerns that have been raised is whether the effectiveness of this bill and whether this bill will create unintended consequences, especially from gaps of implementation. So when I talk about this, concerns raised are often the rampantness of the illicit cigarette market, issues of inconsistent enforcements or whether enforcements will be opened up to abuse, concerns of whether this infringe, of course, personal liberties of a person, and whether this infringe even constitutional safeguards of equality under the law. So this is a few of our many concerns that we raised by all different stakeholders, which was taken into account by the Select Committee.
So to be specific, right, some of the points raised have also focused on the powers granted under the bill, the risk of possible abuse. And I was hoping you could expand on these elements in particular.
So basically in the bill, it gives a lot of powers to the enforcers, especially I can give an example, to even request for a spot check to determine if a person has a possession of a cigarette or even a vape, especially those born after the year 2007. So we raise concerns whether this will be abused by unscrupulous authorities to simply spot check people, including children, which of course gives up to the open the doors to even harassment, patting, sexual harassment, and so forth. On top of that, this bill also gives power for the police to even ask for your phones or even your computers, even data from your phones and computers to check if you purchase such vape products and everything. Again, these are very overreaching powers. We are concerned that it may open gaps for abuse, and this must be regulated even more. Of course, issues of fines, issues of consistency of enforcement, especially when we look at the track record of ACTA 342 during the COVID period. So again, while the principle of the bill is good, but if it's enforced wrongly or if there's inconsistency or enforced, we are concerned that it will be open up for abuse.
So the punishments that are proposed involve some pretty heavy fines towards the sales of cigarettes or tobacco to those born in 2007 and beyond. And this is both for the seller as well as the user. What are your thoughts on both parties being fined? Because other countries have taken the approach of fining only the seller of the products.
Right. So in our Select Committee recommendations, we make a stand to show that, to basically say that there shouldn't be any criminalization, especially when it comes to possession. Our concern has been for young people. The young people, number one, any children should not be fined because children are dependent and they, regardless of amount, they shouldn't be fined. Juveniles, they shouldn't be, for example, criminalized. They shouldn't have a criminal record. They should be in prison. We have proposed alternative so-called punishments, including community service, mandatory counselling, so on and so forth. That is why we are actually negotiating now with the Ministry of Health to address this, to remove the criminalizations or even remove any compound or punitive actions or possessions. This is something that we believe that education is the front line when we address this. And this is the most easy one to be open to abuse, especially, for example, I mean, possession is so vague. I could throw a cigarette into my friend's bag and he gets spot check and he will be punished. I think that's unfair. When it comes to sellers, of course, I understand a lot of we want to target the big boys, especially those that sell to the underage or sells knowingly these products to people that shouldn't be buying. But then they open certain enforcement concerns against. For example, what if a company recruits young people to be agents to sell such a product? And by the definition of law, these young people are actually bound by the law, thus open to criminalization, open to fine, open to jail term, and so on and so forth. And this is not the spirit of what we want to do. So that has to be defined correctly. I can give another example. 7-Eleven, what if the person in the shop sells to a person he shouldn't be selling to? Who gets criminalized? Who gets the penalty? The seller in the shop or the company that owns 7-Eleven? So this will look that has to be addressed. At the end of the day, we are very adamant and we are talking to the minister now. Hopefully he is open to remove any criminalization, to remove any punitive action when it comes to possession, just like what it is done in New Zealand.
We do have a message from Ravin, and I thought I would get you to address it. So Ravin was saying that they're worried that this will just, that delaying the bill will only risk a future government reversing the bill. Do you have thoughts on that?
Basically, what we recommend is to delay the implementation of the Generation Endgame. We actually recommend for us to pass the bill in principle. But the Generation Endgame, at the first, it was 2005. After the recommendations, the minister agreed to meet us halfway to 2007. So the bill is still alive. The spirit of our recommendation is actually to give life to the bill first, and then for the government to prove that they are prepared to implement the GEG, they are prepared to make it to work. So instead of aborting it at the start, but let's give life and let's see whether it can achieve its intended target without unintended consequences.
We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Kelvin Yee after this. We are talking about the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill and some pushback that has emerged to it. Let us know, are you in support of this bill? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and stay tuned for more with Dr. Kelvin Yee. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:46. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're talking about the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill that was tabled yesterday in Parliament, and specifically looking at some criticism of it, or some components of it at least. Do weigh in. Are you in support of the bill? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Kelvin Yee, Committee Chairman of the Parliamentary Special Select Committee on Health, Science and Innovation. Dr. Kelvin, there's also been conversation about prison time for the sale of tobacco products to those born after 2007. And you've brought up some concerns about this, as well as a criminal record for juvenile offenders. You touched on this briefly earlier, but could you expand on that?
So basically, at the end of the day, the front line has to be education. We have seen how criminalization sometimes have adverse effects or unwanted effects, whether victimizing the groups that have been targeted, so on and so forth. So that is why we in the Select Committee, we recommend strongly that there shall be no criminalization, especially for possession. The fine also has to be reasonable. The Act currently stipulates 5,000 maximum, but we are asking the minister to come up with a very clear enforcement guideline to ensure that first-time offenders will get a very minimal fine. Only then you go through a tier system, and of course the factors of socioeconomic status and surrounding factors has to be taken into account. So that has to be specifically written in the guideline by the Ministry of Health and briefed and distributed to all enforcement agencies. We do not want inconsistent enforcement, just like what we experienced in the 342 in during the COVID period. So again, we are against the spirit of imprisonment, criminalization, but we want to help address this issue on an educational awareness level. And this is even both for possession and to a certain extent seller, especially when it involves young people, especially when big companies recruit young people to be agents. There has to be some level of protection and safeguard for them so that they are not too heavily handed, punished on this matter.
You spoke about education earlier and measures that could work to discourage smoking. I was hoping that now is the time, really, that you could tell us what else you'd like to see here. What would work?
I think actually one of the major recommendations under our select committee is to actually improve the MQIT program. I think the government now has launched the GEGA, which is to promote the Generation Endgame. I think resources has to be pumped into educating children from young on the importance, on the danger of smoking, as well as even families and parents on how they can be part of it. One of the things that we also recommended is for nicotine replacement, NRT, nicotine therapy. I'm talking about the patch, I'm talking about gums and so on and so forth, should be readily available even off-counter. Currently, you need a prescription that acts as a hurdle for people to get access to such a therapy. So basically, we want to strengthen better communications, better campaigns. Remember, we had FATNAT campaigns before, and also make NRTs, or nicotine replacement therapy, more available and more accessible to the people. And it's actually seen in certain countries how with the promotion of this kind of education and awareness, there has been some positive results.
Now, tobacco industry players have brought up how the measures proposed in the bill would push people towards obtaining tobacco products illegally. What's your stance on this?
I think, again, it's not a definitive argument. It's a presumption. But with that said, we cannot deny the existence of a relatively rampant illicit market here in Malaysia. And that is why the Select Committee actually took this argument seriously. And our proposal, and it's actually one of the meat of our proposal, is to include a mandatory evaluation period for the bill, one right before the implementation of the GUG, which is supposed to be 2 years after this, and one 10 years after the implementation of GUG, in order to determine the effectiveness of the implementation, in order to determine whether the government is prepared to implement GUG, especially in the first evaluation, whether it's prepared to implement GUG, and certain parameters which will be agreed in the Select Committee and the Ministry of Health includes, can they control the illicit cigarette? I'm not expecting them to perform miracles and reduce them significantly, but if you can show certain positive reduction, that shows that they have a proper enforcement framework in order to address this. And if certain these parameters are properly ticked, the Select Committee are willing, again, to give recommendations and it will be tabled in Parliament for debate.
Could you explain a little bit more about what would be evaluated, alongside with what you just mentioned, but then also whether the parameters would change from year 2 and year 10, for instance?
Okay. So basically, why the spirit of our recommendations is we want to give life to the bill. But in order to give life, we also do not want just to let the bill alone without taking care and making sure that it grows properly. So that is where this mandatory evaluation, we want to ensure that the first evaluation will be right before the implementation of the Generation Endgame, which is 2 years and a half from now. And this, the main parameters that we are looking at, of course, number one, the government's preparedness to implement it. And this includes, as I said, an interagency enforcement framework, whether they have, in this next 2 years, have they increased enforcement, for example, smoking in restaurants and so on and so forth. Other parameters such as are the young people aware of such a law? We don't personally punish them for something that they're not aware and so on and so forth. And that's why we call for a delay of the GEG's implementation. And of course, the second parameter that we really want to look at in the first evaluation is whether there is a need for separate legislation for vape and non-combustible and the traditional tobacco, which is what is practiced in New Zealand, in the UK, and of course other countries. So these are the main two parameters for the first evaluation. The second evaluation on the 10th year will be to evaluate, of course, the effectiveness of the GEG. As I said, a lot of concerns raised on whether it will work, whether there is unintended consequences. So in 10 years, we will see the data, we will look at the statistics to see, does it really work? Or is there any unintended consequences? For example, the argument of whether there's an increase of illicit cigarettes. So we let the data and science speak. So our thinking behind the whole recommendation is, let's give the bill a chance. And let's see, if we believe in the bill, if we believe in the science and believe in the data of the bill, can withstand scrutiny. And we know that ministers tend to stand up in Parliament and say, okay, we'll review and review, but they actually never really do, or they do an internal review, which is not transparent. So we want to be innovative to compel the Ministry of Health to insert this. Of course, whether ideally to insert in the bill, that there is a mandatory evaluation time, and this report will be tabled in Parliament to be debated in those time frame. And this actually will keep the Ministry of Health on their toes, to hit certain KPIs to make sure that they implement this bill or this law properly without unintended consequences.
We have a question from a listener, Crispy Bacon, who mm-hmm. says, I understand the health benefits of the government. I understand mm-hmm. the health benefits the government is going for, but the tobacco sin tax has been a cash cow for ages, and it's also a big employer of manpower. Does the government have plans in place to replace the lost funds?
So again, if you look at how much we collect from taxes and how much is being spent to treat tobacco-related diseases, it's actually 1 to 4, which means 1 ringgit we pay tax, we spend about 4 ringgit treating tobacco-related diseases. just this year alone, just this statistics from MOH, about $3 billion is collected from tobacco tax. $6 billion is used to treat lungs and heart conditions. And we know tobacco-related illnesses is actually from the head to the toe. It's more than just lungs and heart and heart condition. So that is why, on the long term, especially when we have the time bomb of a non-communicable disease, especially in our country, there is a need for public health interventions. There is a need to invest in interventions, especially to stop habits such as smoking in addressing this. So if we look on the economic cost, actually we are saving more if we invest in such public health measures.
In closing, what message would you like to leave us with?
I think at the end of the day, a good bill without proper implementation is just a nice piece of paper. And that has always been the consideration of the Select Committee. We believe in the principle of the bill. We believe in the spirit of the bill. And of course, we are supportive of it. But our responsibility is to make sure that implementation gaps are being addressed and it does not have any unintended consequences. And that's why we hope the government will be open to our suggestions. And we give credit. The minister has been in communication with myself and the committee. And certain concessions have been given. So at the end, we want to see a healthier Malaysia for our people and also our future generation.
Dr. Kelvin, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Dr. Kelvin Yee, Committee Chairman of the Special Select Committee on Health, Science and Innovation, weighing in on the call to, I think, to look at the bill that's been proposed and perhaps also consider whether there's need for continuous evaluation of it. Let us know, are you in support of the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. I think we have time for some messages.
Yes, so let's start with Munif, who says, I couldn't care less what smokers want to do with their lives, but a huge amount of them in this country can't seem to stop littering everywhere with cigarette butts. So good riddance with this generational endgame. That's a whole demographic of a public menace we don't have to put up with again. And I mean, this is something that's brought up quite a bit, actually, pollution in all its forms, whether air or literal in terms of looking down and seeing like a puddle of cigarette butts. And you're right, I'm actually kind of looking forward to that, and also looking forward to not walking up to a bin and seeing the horrid porcupine of, you know, of cigarette butts sticking out of it.
Legion says, yes, totally in support, but I only wish it could have been done earlier. It would have also reduced global warming and reduced landfills, reduced forests being chopped down for tobacco cultivation. How about a global ban? Offering vape or cigarettes to underage children should be treated as a crime. However, not building bridges and making children risk their life to cross the bridge is sadly not treated as a criminal. Ban sales of cigarettes and vapes within a 10 km radius of schools, kindergartens and hospitals. Now, to be fair, Legion, the bill does make space for abetment, or providing, as our guest earlier said, providing children, not all children, but those, basically those born in 2007 and beyond. So I think it is being accounted for in the way that you're saying.
Just briefly, the New Zealand version of the bill actually allows for tobacco products to be sold only in specialty shops. And I think that that's one way of getting around this idea of 10-kilometre radius or keeping it very contained.
Send your thoughts our way. Are you in support of the Tobacco Generational Endgame Bill? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.